Hello and welcome to the latest mini episode of the Comics in the Golden Age podcast. This is Mike Lane, and today I'm going to be talking a little bit about EC Comics. This one was inspired by one of my recent purchases, one of the latest EC archives. This particular one reprinted the entire series of Aces High, one of the New Direction titles from EC Comics. So when I say New Direction, what does that mean? Well, Chris and I have talked about EC Comics history in previous episodes, but let me do a brief recap as some background. Now, EC was originally founded by Max Gaines. Max Gaines, way back in 1933, had produced what is arguably the first modern comic book, Funnies on Parade, which was a collection of newspaper strips, and it was a giveaway, a promotional item, actually. It wasn't sold to customers. He then went on to become co-publisher of All American Comics, the company that produced such characters as Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, and Flash. Now, obviously, he had a working relationship with National because the characters appeared together in Justice Society of America stories and All-Star Comics. He eventually sold his interest in All-American to National. He then went on to found his own new comic company, known as EC Comics, although he intended that to mean educational comics, now what we know later as meaning entertainment comics. Unfortunately, Bill Gaines died in 1947 in a boating accident. His company was taken over by his son, Bill Gaines. Now, Bill was not that interested in it. He had been studying to be a chemistry teacher and wasn't very fond of the idea of becoming a magazine publisher, but, you know, family pressure made him do it. When Max sold his interest in All-American to National, he did hold on to one title, which was Picture Stories from the Bible, which gave an idea of the type of comic he was looking to make. Now, EC's history is divided into several periods. The first one is known as the pre-trend, and this refers to Max Gaines' tenure as well as the first few years that Bill Gaines was in charge. And as I said, Max took with him Picture Stories from the Bible. He expanded with similar title, Picture Stories from American History. He also had a lot of funny animal books. Unfortunately, the company was just not doing very well. By the time Bill took over, they were losing a lot of money. So Bill started chasing trends. This included Western crime romance, such titles as Gunfighter, Saddle Romances, Crime Patrol, War Against Crime. Still wasn't quite doing what they wanted it to do, though. These weren't lasting. And this leads us to the new trend period. This is the renaissance period for EC. And we ended up with such amazing titles like Tales from the Crypt, Haunt of Fear, Shock Suspense Stories, Weird Science. This is basically the period that EC is known for. Unfortunately, this was also a period of tremendous backlash against comic books. You know, Frederick Wortham's Seduction of the Innocent, the Synod hearings, all the criticisms for corrupting children and causing juvenile delinquency, which sadly led to the creation of the Comics Code Authority and the cancellation of all the awesome titles that EC was putting out over the last few years. This leads us to EC's final period of publication known as the New Direction Comics. This is their attempt to put out somewhat less controversial books. A lot of the same creators were involved, but they didn't go for the shock and awe of the previous horror comics and sci-fi comics they'd been getting so much criticism for over the last few years. These include such titles as Valor, which is sort of a knight-centric comic book, Aces High, an aviation-oriented title, Psychoanalysis, MD, about physicians, Extra, which was centered around journalist stories. Sadly, none of these comics lasted more than 5 issues, some of them not even that. After that, EC Comics focused only on magazines, and this included, of course, the famed Mad Magazine, which is where they would experience their most long-lasting success. But they had a few others that were rather short-lived. These were called their photo fiction magazines, and they were a combination of illustrations and text stories. And this was going back in topics to a little more similar to their shocking era of horror stories. It included Shock Illustrated, Crime Illustrated, Terror Illustrated, and Confessions Illustrated. But none of these really lasted more than 2 issues. A few of them had a 3rd issue that had been made but was never distributed. Eventually, and sometime in the 2000s, these were finally collected in reprint form. But after they died, it was pretty much just Mad Magazine from then on. Now, until this week, I had not really read any of their New Direction comics, other than a sprinkling of ones that have been reprinted over the years in various blogs. I've always been very curious as to the quality, though, because again, these did still involve a lot of the same creators that had been around for some of their best work, although they were obviously more hamstrung now in how far they could push things. The two I've always been most interested in reading were Valor and Aces High, as well as Incredible Science Fiction 2. I almost forgot about that one. So that's why I was incredibly excited this week to finally pick up the EC archives of Aces High, and I figured I'd summarize and discuss a few of the stories here. Two of the ones I'm going to do are The Way It Was from Aces High number 1, cover dated March-April 1955, and Chivalry from Aces High 2, dated May-June 1955. Now, both of these stories were drawn by George Evans, and I really want to focus on him for a few minutes here, and you'll see why shortly. Now, I'm going to read a short excerpt from Tales of Terror, the complete compendium of all the incredible old EC comics. I've used this book before in here. It is an amazing resource for all things related to EC, and it has a number of biographies of the creators involved, and I'm just going to read George Evans' biography here on the podcast. It reads, "Lovable old George was born on February 5th, 1920 in Harwood, Pennsylvania. His early training came from a correspondence course he sent for while still in high school. Within a short time, he was doing illustrations for pulp magazines on aviation, where he also did some writing, spies, and science fiction such as Planet Stories. Then came service in the Air Force during the war, after which he was a staff artist at Fiction House. Then he freelanced for several publishers, landing at Fawcett for a while, appearing in the War and Horror mags and in Captain Video. While the bulk of his work at EC was in the horror and suspense mags, his interest in aviation led to his writing and illustrating three stories for EC's late period war comics. Later, Aces High was created with Evans in mind. His work appeared all the way through the New Direction and Pictofiction periods. After EC, he did work for Gold Key, Classics Illustrated, and Dell's Twilight Zone. He also did Space Conquerors and Boys Life magazine and other advertising work. From 1960 to 1972, he ghost illustrated the daily episodes of the Terry and the Pirates comic strip. Now, I should mention that this volume I'm reading from was published in 2000. At the time, George Evans was still alive. Sadly, he passed away in June 2001 at the age of 81. So keeping in mind that Aces High was created with him in mind and his interest in aviation, you can see why I wanted to give a little background on George Evans before I started reviewing these stories. So let's turn to the stories. The first one is, as I said, The Way It Was, which was drawn by George Evans and it was written by Irv Wurstein. Now, this story is very heavy on narration, so I'm just going to read a lot directly from it to kind of give you an idea of what it is. Now, this first page, before I start reading, I want to mention is a beautiful splash image by Evans. It's got several, five or six aircraft kind of in a row, and they're each from different eras, extending back prior to World War I, up to World War II, to what was then sort of modern jet aircraft, including as well what looks to be a futuristic sort of rocket one there in the background. And all the ships are flying up among the clouds. And they're way in the background, kind of shadowed. You can see the images of knights riding the horses with their swords being held up high in the air. And the story begins, "Today it is difficult to believe that modern jet fighter planes, with their supersonic speeds and awesome firepower, have evolved from the flimsy aircraft of World War I, when 135 miles per hour was considered blinding speed, and a plane mounting two machine guns was regarded as almost impregnable. Yet the Spad of yesteryear was the father of the Saber Jet, the Gobwith Camel mother to the Shooting Star. Their wood and fabric had been replaced with metal and plastic, their droning gasoline engines with ear-splitting turbines, their chattering machine guns with screaming rockets and roaring cannon. There's been progress, yes, development, change. But when something else has changed along their engineering, something is gone, lost. Perhaps there's an element in the men that flew them. Perhaps it would be well to look back, to remember to see the way it was." The story opens with a grandfather and a grandson in an air show. The grandson is very excited. He loves seeing the planes. His grandfather seems sort of melancholy. He's commenting on how different they are from when he flew back in World War I. Seems to suggest that there's something being lost by the technological advancements. At that point, his grandson asks him to tell him stories of when he was a pilot. So he starts telling his grandson, "Our planes weren't much compared to those they fly today. Few were faster than 100 miles an hour. And a flight of 50 miles distance was a big operation. When World War I started over 40 years ago, airplanes were a curiosity and used only for observation. They carried no armament at all, for it was feared that the recoil of a weapon might affect the plane's flight. Enemies flew closer to each other without any danger. But one day, two unknown Englishmen watching a German observation plane over their aerodrome had a sudden inspiration. We see that one of them suggested that they throw a rock to the other plane, because if it got close enough to hit the prop, that it would cause a crash. And so when the German observation plane returned on its next patrol, a rock-throwing Englishman opened the door to a new era in military aviation. From that crude start, air combat developed into an exacting science. Soon every plane went up armed, at first with rifles, carbines, shotguns, even pistols. then machine guns synchronized to fire through the propeller. Planes were designed especially for fighting, and Swift single-seaters had been developed by 1916. The Spad, the Mirreport, the FEs, the de Havilland, the Sopwith Camel by the Allies, the Albatross and the Fokker by the Germans. Air combat was still an individual matter then, for group tactics had not yet been devised. Pilots fought valiantly and hard, with great respect for each other. So as you can tell already, this story is basically a history lesson. But the real strength, which is hard obviously to convey in an audio medium like this, is the art. Throughout the story, Evans does a great job drawing the aircraft, the battle scenes. Just with some line work and the positions of the planes, he does a great job of conveying action. He also does a fantastic job with the uniforms. You could tell this is someone who's very knowledgeable. There's a lot of detail to the uniforms and the planes. Planes are often very vibrantly colored, which... Now, the coloring, as is always the case with EC, was done by Marie Severin. But I really got to wonder how much Evans may have worked with her on this, just because of the exacting nature of the color design here, how careful it is, and the variety. It's really beautiful to see some of these images of planes flying. Now, the story continues on from where I left off, getting a little bit more into the history of the development of aircraft and air battles during World War I, but I'm going to jump ahead to the end. It continues, but despite the crudities of World War I aircraft, the Germans developed giant bombers, which penetrated screens of anti-aircraft guns and barrage balloons and actually bombed London. Yes, this was a glorious time, a time of excitement and courage, of chivalry and honor, when the aviator in the cockpit was the master of his machine and his fate, and truly was a knight in the sky. The story ends finally with the grandson and grandfather sitting at a bench, and the grandson saying how much he wants to grow up to be a pilot, and the grandfather commenting that nothing ever really changes, that in his day every boy dreamed of flying a Spad or a Sopwith. Now, this was obviously a very, very romanticized version of war in this history lesson, but it was still interesting to sort of go back and learn a little bit about the development of aircraft. And again, it's hard to really kind of understand how good this story was without actually laying eyes on the art, because that's really what it came down to. This was just a chance for Evans to sort of have his playground and just have fun. And it makes sense that this would be the first story, because if this title was created with Evans in mind, this is sort of the perfect intro. I should mention that I have an inherent kind of bias in favor of this story going in, and it's because of the time period I grew up in. I was born in 1973, and in that year, and really throughout the 80s and 90s, and I say this as someone who really loved history and studied history, most of the pop culture, most of the education I received, it was oriented around World War II and Vietnam, and probably for obvious reasons. World War II was very omnipresent for several decades after, and it probably remains so today because it was so simple for young people to digest. And I'm not saying that as, I'm not trying to make a judgment or historical critique on the war. I'm just saying that for young people in pop culture and history studies, it was simple in the sense that you had a good side and you had a bad side. And that made it very easy for people to kind of put that in television movies. And it was very easy for us as young people in that era to understand what was going on. You had the Nazis, you had the good side. You had the Japanese, who, as much as they had become our allies even by the time I was growing up, they committed some pretty horrible stuff in, you know, Asia, and they attacked us. They were the bad guys. They bombed the United States. And I'm not making a historical judgment. I'm just saying what it was like for someone growing up during that period. Then you had Vietnam. And Vietnam was much, much, much more complicated. But it was very much something that was being dealt with throughout both political culture, social culture, pop culture, throughout the 70s, 80s, and 90s. It was my parents' generation. It was a generation afterwards. Those are the people who are making movies, television shows. Those are the people who are running for office. It was something that was very present throughout my youth and my adulthood. And those are the two wars I heard about. Korea, you know, as much as so many people fought in that war, as big as it was, it didn't get the attention the other two did, and neither did World War I. And it just was not something that I was being exposed to as a kid. So as a result, I always had it, World War I had a mystique. And that's one of the reasons going into this volume and reading comics, any kind, Enemy Ace from DC, I always had a certain kind of attraction to that era because I didn't understand it. It was mysterious. It was modern. They wore helmets, they had machine guns, they had tanks, they had planes. But it was a little different. It was more complicated. There wasn't necessarily a good guy, bad guy. And later when I studied it as an adult, I kind of understood that there wasn't a good guy, bad guy. It was just what I thought it was. That mystique was there. So I've always kind of been attracted to World War I history. But I am rambling way too much on that topic. So let me get back to the actual comic book I came here to discuss. The next story, as I said, is called Chivalry, and it is from the second issue of Aces High, and another one drawn by George Evans. This one has a different writer, though. This one is written by Carl Wessler. This one opens, as usual, with a beautiful splash page of an air battle between the different sides, and as always, obviously George Evans does a great job on it. I'm going to go ahead and open by reading from the blurb on that page. As it was in the olden days, when chivalrous knights in armor sought combat for glory and adventure, so it was in the same spirit in those days of 17 that gallant gladiators in leather flew forth to do battle in the skies. In the Kaiser's time, as in the time of Richard the Lionhearted, there were laws, unwritten laws, rules of conduct by which these warriors in spads and Fokkers lived and died. This book, then, is a history of such men. In this first story, of one man who violated those codes. Our story begins with a violent dogfight 5,000 feet above the bleakness of no man's land, somewhere in France. This one I'm going to do a little differently than the last one. It's going to be a briefer summary. The story opens and you see two soldiers, or two pilots. One is Lieutenant Patrick Hogan. The other one that we know is the Kid. And you can see that they have a relationship, but Patrick has kind of taken the Kid under his wing. This is both their first air battles, but you can still get the sense that Hogan is the more competent experience of the two. And you kind of go back and learn their history when they first met. When Hogan kind of took him under his wing, you see him going back and hanging out with each other's families. You really see him kind of save his butt in battle, too. The Kid is a little on the reckless side. Their story leads into this one particular battle where there's this German pilot, Von Ritter, and he's almost got the drop on the Kid when Hogan comes in at the last minute to save him. And the Kid gets injured pretty bad anyways, and later you see him at the hospital. But then back at the German base, you see Ritter hanging out with some other German pilots, and he's really disturbed because he saw the young guy very up close, the Kid, and he's just kind of blown away at seeing such a young soldier out there and the fact that he almost killed him. And you can tell it's kind of eating away at him. Von Ritter hears some other soldiers talking, and there's one particular pilot that bothers him because the guy's really insulting Americans. He's talking about how he's going to destroy them. So Von Ritter pulls him aside and gives him sort of a lecture, say they're soldiers, they're not murderers, and there are rules that they go by in the air. And he sort of puts the guy in his place. Then the story takes us to another air battle, and again, it's between Von Ritter's group and the Kid and Hogan. And that new kind of bloodthirsty soldier that got put in his place, that pilot is the one that goes after the Kid. And he crashes the Kid's ship, and as the Kid's running away, he follows him, and he basically shoots him down. And of course, this pisses Hogan off, who then follows after the plane and takes that guy down. Then you see Von Ritter approach, but instead of continuing the battle, he basically flies alongside Hogan, and you can get the sense that he's not proud of the way his pilot behaved, you know, gunning down the Kid as he's running away from his crash plane. So the two of them give each other a little salute, and I'm just going to read the last few panels here. Pat turned slowly away. He was willing to die now, but not a Jerry opened up. Instead, the Baron's plane came by, and the Baron saluted him. It was a tribute and an apology, all in one. Pat smiled sadly and returned to the salute. Things would be different now. The Kid was gone. Pat would miss him. But one thing hadn't changed. Pat knew that. Decency, that still ruled in the air above France. Again, this is another highly romanticized telling of World War I. You could tell from the title Chivalry that was probably what we were going to get. But still, again, Evans' art made the story work. I do admit, if you compare these stories to what EC was doing before the code, they do lack the bite and emotion that... And I'm not saying those original stories are masterpieces all the time, but I do think that, you know, the military titles, just as well as all the other ones EC was putting out, they did carry a little bit more power prior to the code. But I still think this is a perfectly adequate war comic. I think it's a great comic for kids. I think a lot of young boys probably read this, and it's apparently not enough since it didn't last. But I personally would have thought this was a great comic as a kid. I will say that, you know, like any collection, it's hit and miss. I specifically went out of my way to read Evan's stories because his title wasn't intended for him, and he was the World War I buff, the veteran. Some of the others aren't so good, but at the same time, you know, there's some Wally Wood-drawn stories in here as well. So I do think it's worth picking up. And I still really want to get Valor and some of the other post-code New Direction titles by EC, because I enjoyed this one. I'm very glad I got it. As I said early on, I've been wanting to read these for a very, very long time. It's unfortunate that these didn't survive much longer, but, you know, EC did evolve into Mad Magazine, and, you know, they had a pretty successful run there, so it was probably destined to be. I still look forward to visiting the other titles. And I want to thank you for joining me. A few closing matters before I sign off. Chris and I already talked in the last episode about how this year has been kind of a rough one for personal reasons, so the show is going to be a bit chaotic as far as scheduling for a while, but we do have some episodes coming up we've been planning, and there are going to be both minis and the two of them do it together. We also still have the Hal Foster Prince Valiant one we've been wanting to do for a very long time, but given that one's going to require a good bit more work, we've had to kind of table that for a little bit, but we do want to get to it soon. And I have a few ideas for some other mini episodes coming up as well. I also want to give a shout out to our followers on Twitter, because our Twitter account has really been super active lately, and I've gotten to know a lot of great fans, comic fans on there, and I've really been enjoying the interaction. I think we're really close to hitting about 4,000 followers. I think last time I checked, we were 3,966, and we're part of a pretty active community on there, and I really enjoy the interaction. I really see everyone's love of comics on there. Twitter can be a cesspool, but I feel like I've been lucky enough to be surrounded by a really positive group of fans who really appreciate the creators, appreciate comics history, and I love interacting with them. So I wanted to thank you all. And with that, good night.
Hear them calling you and me, every son of liberty. Hurry right away, no delay, go today. Make your daddy glad to have had such a lad. Tell your sweetheart not to.